This is Jason Stewart with the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, conducting an oral history interview with Mr. David Carson. Today is March 31st, 2011. I'm in Lubbock, Texas, in the Special Collections Library on the campus of Texas Tech, and Mr. Carson is joining me by phone from Missouri. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Why don't we begin, if we could, with a little bit of biographical information. First of all,
okay.
When and where were you born?
I was born the 30th of April of 1951 in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay. All right. Could you tell me, I guess, a little bit about your parents? What were their names and what did they do for a living?
Mary Carson was my mother. She worked as a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, Charles Carson, worked at a service station.
Okay. All right. did you grow up there in Detroit?
No, I grew up in Flint, Michigan.
Flint, Michigan. Okay. All right. If you wouldn't mind, could you tell me a little bit about, what life was like growing up in Flint at that time?
Well, you know, we went to an all-white school to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty well hung out with, that was in the big days, you know, money was busting everywhere, and the production plants for vehicles was on its high end, and so it was a relatively medium income communities.
Mm-hmm.
And but for me, I just hung out with a few people and get in a little trouble. No law, they didn't catch me.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I stayed in Michigan until I was, my mother left when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I turned 17, I went in the Army.
Okay.
My life was, Dad was working, Mom was working. I'm the only child.
Mm-hmm.
And, I never saw him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What made you decide to join the Army when you did? Did you have any interest in the Army as a kid?
No.
Okay.
No, I just did it. I guess out of despite to leave Flint.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad had to sign for me. My birthday's on the 30th of April.
Mm-hmm.
I was in basic training on the 6th of May.
Oh wow! Wow. Okay. Well, before we get into basic, could you tell me? I guess just did you have any jobs as a kid growing up? Anything like that?
No, I had one job. I worked at a gas station.
Okay.
Pumped gas and little oil changes and stuff like that. I worked for the big money of $1.50 an hour.
Right. All right. Had you had any other relatives with military service prior to your joining?
Well, let me see. I had my uncle was in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there was anybody else.
All right.
That I know of.
Okay. Well, again, as a kid growing up, did you pay any attention to what was going on in the world with the Cold War?
No, I'm dumber than a box of rocks on that.
Right.
I just, I was a 15-year-old kid. Hell, I just didn't pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
No attention to nothing. I didn't read the newspaper. Let's see, we had television, so I didn't watch TV much of news.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir. Well, by the time you joined, had you heard much about Vietnam, though?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I was the only child, so I didn't pay attention to nothing.
Okay. All righty. Excuse me. Once you joined, can you tell me a little bit about the process of joining and, I guess, your introduction to the Army, what that was like for you?
Well, I went down to the recruiters, and they asked me what I wanted to do. I says, I don't know, probably mechanics. You don't want to fly? You don't want to jump? I said, no, I'm not going to do nothing but turn the key on something.
Right.
They weren't going to bowl me into infantry. I was at least that smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd take papers back to my dad. He was upset that he had to do that, but he did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Detroit processing station.
Okay.
And one line was regular Army. Right side with U.S. draftees. The Marines would gather their people by going down a hallway going, you, and you. You're Marines now.
Right.
But, I don't know. And then we went through the normal processing of medical and personal, and then they put us on a plane, sent us to Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay. So that's where you went through your basic then at Fort Knox?
Yes, at Fort Knox.
Okay. All right. Could you talk, I guess, a little bit about what basic was like for you, the typical day of basic training, that type of thing?
Well, I think it's unusual.
Okay.
First week, I broke my ankle.
Mm, wow.
So I couldn't do nothing of much of anything. So I had to go somewhere. I had to ride on a supply truck.
Right.
I went through 7 casts on my legs because
wow.
I was trying to do as much as I could. Because back then they didn't have recycling,
mm-hmm.
and I know now why they didn't, because they had to get bodies to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I didn't realize that till years later. And another thing I learned was I didn't have to go to Vietnam.
Mm. Okay.
Because I was the only child.
Right.
So. Basic was basic. I picked up cigarette butts. I dug holes. We were hazed, which was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Grab your foot locker and run outside in your BVDs in the middle of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy it.
Right.
Even when my future wife visited me, that's about the only good time I had.
Mm-hmm.
All the training we got was, as in today's standard, was primitive.
Okay.
Very primitive. The tactics were led more to Vietnam than all they were doing, shoving bodies out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There wasn't any real emphasis on anything. Even at the firing range, you shoot, you miss. Well, that's because all they wanted was bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would have never went through because of my broken ankle.
Right. How'd you break your ankle?
We were running. They hit a rock.
Mm. Okay.
And I turned, my foot turned on me and I sat on it.
Ah, I see. Right. When you were going through, did they make much mention of Vietnam? Did they talk about it very much?
One individual did, and that was the senior drill instructor.
Okay.
He probably had 40 years in Vietnam.
Right.
But he must have been there the day Ho Chi Minh was born. Now, he'd talk about Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to take you up in a helicopter and push you out, and he was an old infantry NCO, and that was about, really, there was very little talk about Vietnam, even though we realized we were destined to go
mm-hmm.
at one time or another in our career.
Right.
But other than that, the Army secluded
mm-hmm.
in them days. We didn't have cell phones and laptops. And,
right.
And the media really didn't cover anything but the blood and the gore at night.
Mm-hmm.
But there just wasn't any real mention of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you mentioned that you guys were destined to go to Vietnam. At what point did you learn that you would probably be going?
About day one.
So they told you guys pretty much from day one that
you guys ain't nothing but bodies. All I'm here to, my drill instructor said, All I'm here to do is get you through basic training so I can send you to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And you're pretty well right.
Right. What was the reaction to that?
Well, everybody goes, oh, crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some just, oh, yeah, la-di-da.
Yeah.
Try to brush it off.
Well, I know you mentioned the one drill instructor that probably had plenty of service in Vietnam. How about the others? Were most of them Vietnam?
I'd say there was, I think there was five drill instructors and a senior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They tell you all the same crap.
Okay.
You don't learn this, you're going to die in Vietnam because of not learning this. And,
right.
And I think all but one... One out of the five hadn't been to Vietnam yet.
Okay.
You know, the cooks had even been to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Our lieutenants, no. Our captain, no.
Mm-hmm.
But first sergeant, senior drill, and four other drill sergeants were all Vietnam vets.
Mm-hmm. All right. Were there any, discipline problems or anything like that you remember that stick out in your mind? Anything like that happen?
To me?
Well, to you or any of the guys that you were going through with?
Well, I started laughing one time, and the drill sergeant come through the other, I was in third rank, and he came through two ranks, and he just knocked the wind out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Hit me square in the chest like a baseball bat. If you ever try to take a number 10 can and fill it up with cigarette butts, enjoy yourself.
Right.
I've dug holes.
Right.
We'd help the drill sergeant when he'd come in too drunk to walk. But let's say discipline was standard.
Mm-hmm.
It was just about standard. If you messed up, you'd get punished by doing physical activity.
Okay.
Till you couldn't go no more. And then, I used to be a drill instructor.
Okay.
So I could understand why they did what they did, but at the time, it was pretty well across the board.
Okay.
If one drill sergeant caught you doing something, he'd do something to you. PT, make you run more, and it didn't matter because all the drills were together, so they took care of the whole company. But there was no what I'd consider extreme hazing.
Okay.
If you were a dud, they got rid of you within days. We had one fellow trainee that he huffed glue.
Mm-hmm.
So he huffed glue too much and never seen him again.
Right.
And if you were rejected for your sexual preference,
okay,
you were gone instantly.
Right.
Punishment. That's about all the real punishment or things that I noticed ever went on that I can remember.
All right. And you talked about you mentioned the weapons training. At that point, were you guys training on M16s yet, or was it still
M14s?
M14s, okay.
I still love an M14. I have a Mini 14 I own just because I can't afford an M14.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't find an M14 because they all went to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
They're sniper rifles.
Right.
Plus you can't, the M14 is considered an automatic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
But we were still training on the M14, on the 14.
Okay.
I've taken showers with my M14 because in them days, as I know now, they were using a corrosive primer and powder. So if you didn't take ammonia, you dip it, run it once with ammonia, and then you take it to shower with you.
Mm-hmm.
That was an everyday part of your shower, was to make sure you had your weapon with you, scrubbing the bore out.
Okay.
With soap and water.
Right.
Plus, it was part of punishment. In this roundabout way.
Right.
But we kept our weapons in a rack at the into the at the end of the building, since it was old two-story World War II vintage barracks. We keep our weapons in a rack at the end of the hall, right there at the end of the rooms.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. let's see. Overall, you said that the training was just, you know, you talked about just getting you guys through so they could
just
start.
Just get us through.
Right.
I spent 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was drill instructor for 2 years out of 20.
Okay.
I know what you're supposed to do by the training and doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
But you could know, today you wouldn't want to put an old Vietnam vet at the same age as a modern soldier today.
Okay.
Because they know they're getting the training. We just got I realized it was only basic, but it was like just having a bologna sandwich without the bologna.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Well, did you feel that that you were adjusting to the military fairly well going through basic?
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to make it or not.
Okay.
At that particular point.
All right. Well, before moving on to advanced training, any other memorable moments, funny moments, anything like that from basic?
Let me think.
Okay.
I got to think on that one now.
Okay.
There was always moments. Drill Sergeant's friend was a Thunderbird. We had two old cannons in our front of our barracks, and one Sunday, his friend drove his Thunderbird through the barrel on the end of the barrel and took out his windshield. Drunk, tore up all the lawn. Drill sergeant said, "You guys got about 3 minutes to get this car out of here." He took care of his friends. We cleaned everything up, and nothing was ever said. The worst thing I think I ever seen: somebody stole a case of beer from the mess hall.
Okay.
One of the drill sergeants had. Mercy. I don't even know how to express it. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Until they found out who did it. Because, of course, everybody was punished until they found that case of beer.
Right.
And then, I had to do KP, which was very often, first thing I did is I knocked the leg off the table with the buffer. And the drill sergeants had a habit just to mess with you if you were on KP duty and you had the dining room.
Okay.
You had to bring them their breakfast. Well, they had this down to a science anyway. They'd rattle off their breakfast, and you better hope you remembered. Because if you didn't, he'd just throw it on the floor until you got it right.
Right.
Then that makes the mess sergeant mad.
Sure.
So then you're punished even more.
Right.
Peeling potatoes. That was still an old thing, but we used a machine that somebody had invented on peeling potatoes by having a machine with huge sandpaper in it. Well, then what we thought it was funny, we'd take a good sized potato and make a golf ball out of them.
Right.
Just aggravate.
Sure.
That's about the only thing we could do.
Right.
With that broken leg, I had to ride out with the, I couldn't go on road marches, like to the range.
Right.
And I had to ride with the senior drill sergeant in his Riviera.
Mm.
Well, that meant I rode in the air conditioning.
Right.
And then by the time I got there, them guys were all mad at me. Because
right.
I rode out in a Riviera with air conditioning. They just got off a 10-miler.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the most well-liked guy, but I wasn't hated.
Right.
I didn't get a blanket party.
Yeah.
So I knew it wasn't serious.
Yeah. Were there others who were hated?
Yeah, Yeah, and if they get us in trouble, uh-huh. No, it only took one guy to get us all screwed up.
Right.
We'd all get in trouble. So they wouldn't give him a blanket party. And throw a blanket over him, I'd hold the blanket down, take a bar of soap and a sock and beat him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It broke him that little habit.
Right.
Nobody ever found out. Drill sergeant never asked. You know, the guy's got blackened eyes and bruises all over him, but drill sergeant never asked.
Right.
Because it was condoned. I mean, yeah, something similar to that word.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, despite the broken ankle, I know you said that you didn't, that they weren't recycling people at that point. So despite the broken ankle, did you go through with your class on time?
I went through everything.
Okay. Is there graduated with
even like we get out the hand-to-hand combat pit. I had to try to do as much as I humanly could,
uh-huh.
and above that, because they did. They did recycle.
Okay,
but it was very limited.
Okay,
I couldn't go on the road marches, and just about all I didn't do.
All right,
I did as much physical training as I could do with the cast on.
Mm-hmm.
But went through 7 of them, so I tried.
Right.
I'd wait till they get wet and mushy and go get another one.
Yes, sir.
They did not like you to go on sick call. Oh, no, that was a sin.
I bet.
You wish you had just died and they just buried you than to go up to the drill sergeant and ask for a slip to go over to the medical.
Right.
Because you would be crucified by him for not a day or so, for a week. Plus, he never forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Now I understand how you can do it 5 different ways. But it took me a while.
Okay. Sure. Sure. All right. Well, anything else from basic before moving on to advanced?
No, I think that pretty well covered as much as I can remember.
Okay. All right. Did you go through the AIT there at...
No, they sent me to... They sent me from basic straight to Fort Carson, Colorado with no AIT.
Okay.
And... Well, I didn't know what was going on. I said I'd get on-the-job training.
Okay.
That's about what I did, too. And then, so... I worked as a mechanic assistant since I was only an E1. I pulled KP guard duty every other day. The unit I was assigned to, they had just taken 500 guys and moved out to Vietnam. So they were reorganizing, filling the battalion up, and that battalion runs about 500 men.
Okay.
Well, the company I was in had 15 people. Well, after you take the first sergeant, the captain, the lieutenant, and the senior sergeant there, that don't leave many people.
Right.
So, KP and Manero I worked down in the maintenance section, working on tanks as an apprentice to an E5,
okay.
since I was still an E1, and I was just a total screw up.
Right.
I had a spring. It was about 4 foot tall. It was a recoil spring for an M60 tank. It came with Cosmoline on it, and they told me to clean it. So I got tired of carrying little cans of solvent to clean this Cosmoline. So I went and got me a waste paper basket. I filled it up, and just as soon as I started pouring, I went head over heels and headed all down. The bucket darner stayed on my head. So here I am soaked in solvent. Then comes our warrant officer, an E5 I worked for.
Mm-hmm.
They had to take me to medical. So what they did was put me in the trunk of the car.
Wow.
So I rode over to the barracks. I took a shower, but I still had to go to medical because it burnt anything that wasn't skin.
Mm. Right.
Eyes, other orifices that you can find on your body.
Right.
But I had to ride in the trunk of my boss's car. And he wasn't a happy camper.
Right.
And then you had to go stroke the the heat with coal-fed furnaces in all the maintenance buildings.
Okay.
While on guard duty, now you're supposed to be guarding, you had to stroke the boilers.
Okay.
Then another time on guard duty, I got bored, and I pulled the fire extinguisher for the whole tank. And laughed about it. I thought it was funny.
Right.
And being poor as a private, and I had just got married.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was still in Florida. Well, when I got her out there, you know, I was making maybe $150 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, food got a little tight. So what I'd do is we had ambulances. Since it was a medical battalion, we still had ambulances, and they were in the ready for the Chicago convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just go in there and get what sea rations I could and take them home.
Right.
Or went on KP, take food out in the garbage can and put it in the dumpster, and then when I left, I'd get it out and take it home.
Mm.
Then one day I got caught.
Okay.
by the mess sergeant. He says, "Carson, don't steal from me. If you need some food because you're hungry, it ain't payday, you come see me. I will take care of you guys.
Mm.
But don't steal from me." I didn't steal no more from him.
Right.
And being in that company, we'd go to the field, and the doctors that we had assigned to the medical union, they didn't do squat. A doctor was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We'd put the tents up, they'd go sit on a table. And then we'd have to finish everything else up for them,
right,
because they're doctors.
Right.
We went to the field quite often. But I was only 17.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got more orders to go to NOM.
Right.
Well, I'm still dumb. Remember, I'm only 17. I'm still stupid.
Right.
So I went to Oakland, California.
Okay.
I got to Oakland, and they stamped my records too young, because you had to be 18.
Okay.
So that was my experience at Fort Carson, Colorado.
All right. Did your time working in the gas station as a kid, did that help you out with the mechanic?
No, didn't even come close. All I could wipe your windows pretty good.
Okay.
Because civilian vehicles are like military vehicles. All you do is replace parts.
Mm-hmm.
Diagnose and replace parts. Well, if you don't know how to diagnose, which I didn't,
mm-hmm,
I just replaced parts. If my boss told me to replace that part, I replace that part. Whether it run or not, I'd have to wait.
Right.
But no, that didn't help me at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I know you said that they sent you back because you were too young. How much longer did you have to wait until
I stayed in Oakland, California for 30 days.
Oh, okay.
And I was going to turn 18 on the 30th of April.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, "You know, I got an enlistment contract. You guys haven't even sent me to school yet." And they looked and they said, "Ah, yeah." So they sent me to Fort Ord, California,
mm-hmm,
for mechanics AIT. And I stayed there, like I said, 30 days.
Right, okay.
Went to AIT, 6 weeks there, then I mean, that was a goat roping too, but then I took, they gave me 2 weeks leave. I went back home to Florida, and then I still got my same old orders, go to Vietnam.
Okay. All right. Well, upon getting those orders, how'd you feel about it?
I was scared.
Because mm-hmm,
I had just gotten married.
Right.
My wife was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter was 8 months old when I come home.
Right.
But I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
I realized the world was going to change for me. But the intensity still goes with me today.
Okay.
I haven't lost that little fear, as some people would say.
Okay.
Even though I'm 60 years old. You know, some of the old guys, well, that's childish and crap like that. That boasting guys did drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. But that fear is still with me today as it was the day I got my orders the first time.
Mm-hmm. Sir. Okay. Well, by that point, had you heard much about what was going on in Vietnam?
No.
Okay.
No, the only thing I knew of Nam was the amount of time I spent in Oakland, California, for approximately 30 days. My job was to go get what they call a manifest.
Okay.
I'd go to personnel, they'd give me the manifest of who was shipping out. They had a big, like we call it the barn. It was a big, let's say, an acre building. Once you got that building, you didn't go nowhere but on an airplane.
Okay.
Or on the bus to the airplane. So my job was to take that manifest, call roll call, they'd get on the bus and ship. But I didn't think nothing of it. And then years later, I realized what I was doing. I was the next guy sending them to Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Even though I had no direct, the only direct contact I had was calling, checking off their names. Call their names and check it off.
Right.
And made sure they got on the bus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, that was all I ever heard while I was there. And then, about twice a day, you know how today they'll send 10 bodies home on a C-19.
Right.
They take a 37-foot tractor trailer, stack as many as they could in it, and haul them over to the mortuary at Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
That was how nice and formal they were. They shipped you like a piece of meat.
Right.
But that's always stuck in my mind, especially when I see them doing it in today's world.
Well, seeing those bodies coming home like that
I knew I was in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I realized that this was not a ball, going to a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what the aluminum shipping crates were.
Right. Right.
So that's when I got too scared, and that's when I asked to go to AIT.
Okay.
So I thought maybe I'd squeeze out. I didn't squeeze out. But of course, nobody told me I didn't have to go because I was the only male sibling in the family.
Right.
So there I went. Went home. Went home after AIT and then for 2 weeks and then the big ball game was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I had to leave.
Right.
My wife was pregnant. In them days, you didn't have fancy concords to walk on. You walked outside, went up the steps.
Right.
I got the top step and almost went back down. Almost went AWOL.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew I was scared.
Right.
And didn't know how to react. I knew I had a commitment legally by the Army. I knew they'd come looking for me.
Right.
You know, they used to have AWOL hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Police station getting $50 for every AWOL they caught in a traffic stop. So I knew I'd get caught.
Right.
But I didn't want to leave her and the baby.
Right.
I mean, we're not talking I stood there for 30 minutes, but I stood there for a good minute or two while the rest of the guys were loading. And, that was the worst, one of the worst things that ever happened to me, of decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made a lot of decisions since Vietnam,
right,
in my 20 years, plus life itself.
Right.
That was the hardest one.
All right. when was this? Around what time of year? What year was this?
I think it let me see. I got to, oh, shoot, let me see what day I got to know, and then I can backtrack it.
Okay.
I got to Nam on the, I think the 30th of June or the 1st of July.
Okay.
So, I didn't, I just took, you know, I only got 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was that time frame.
Right.
Or the same year.
Sure, sure. All right. So this, when you were trying to decide whether or not to get on the plane, that was when you were leaving her and not getting on the plane to go to Vietnam, right? Is that correct?
Right, right. I was headed to Oakland.
Okay. All right.
Headed right back where I had left.
Right. All right. And once you got to Oakland, was it immediately on a plane, or was there any...
No. I probably was there maybe a week.
Okay.
And waited my turn on the manifest.
Okay.
And my turn to the barn.
Right.
Once you hit the barn, you were locked in. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a snack bar and a little bit of television of what you could have in them days. And then, you know, soda machines and mm-hmm. little snack bar and stuff. But you couldn't get out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because the MPs were there.
Right.
And then you waited for flight time. Then they would take you up to by bus to Travis Air Force Base there in California.
Okay.
So
right.
that drew me even closer to realizing this wasn't going to be a ball game. For what my little 17 year old mind could think of.
Mm-hmm.
We went on air flight of Evergreen.
Okay.
You only had two rows of seats on each side. So it was a, shit, we called it the champagne flight without the champagne.
Right.
It was the smallest aircraft I've ever been in.
Huh.
As far as commercial goes, and when you could probably set that aircraft and seating arrangement on one corner of a 747.
Mm-hmm.
But it was long. It's 16 hours. We had 1 hour in Japan, but they still wouldn't let us off the plane.
Okay.
Then it was a total of 16 hours till we hit Long Bend, Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. What was the mood like on the plane ride over? Do you remember?
Quiet.
Quiet. Okay.
Somber. There wasn't nobody hooping and hollering. That come later.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. And you came into country, did you say, at Long Bend?
Right, at Long Bend.
Okay. All right. What was your, what was your first impression upon arrival?
They open that door, and that's the worst stank than putting your head in the toilet. Hot, humid, and just pure stank. I've been to outhouses that smelt better.
Right.
So I realized this is not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put us down there and welcomed us to Vietnam. Now that was a hoot.
Right.
As I see it today.
Mm-hmm.
But then they divided us up, told us which barracks we were going to be in, so we went and threw our bags down there, come back out for me. So went over to personnel, went through personnel, then they gave us our orders of where we were going at in country.
Okay.
And then we spent two nights there. The scariest, the boogeyman is nice. I was so scared. In the distance, you'd hear explosions. You'd hear gunfire. You're about to emotionally die. Because, you know, this is not the right place to be. We weren't at Disneyland. Then, about second or third day, like I said, then they give us our orders, put us in a bus, took us to an airport. Okay. Back to the airport in Longmont. Then we, the guys were either getting in helicopters, getting in the back of trucks, small aircraft, depending on how far they had to take them. Mm-hmm. And I got, what did I get? Oh, I got a ride in a C-130. Okay. No seats. All they did was put cargo straps across it. And you had your duffel bag, and you had to hold on.
Right.
When he took off, it was everything you could do to hold on to the strap. And when he stopped, it's like he hit a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
Since the C-130 can go up almost vertical, I think it's, and when it stops, it's on a dime. So there I was in the lot, Vietnam. Got out of that C-130, and it still stunk. I didn't realize that the whole country stunk. And it's a fish. The fish and the rotten cabbage. And nutmeg.
Well, once you arrived at the lot, what was the experience like at that point?
Well, there they put us, give us the barracks, and I don't know, it probably took us a week. Time we drew our equipment, drew our weapons, did a little bit more personnel paperwork, and then we go over to the club and drink. And drink. That drinking kept me going well.
Mm-hmm.
Until 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then they put us on a truck and took us up the hill. We're about 15 miles out of the lot.
Okay.
On a 6,500 foot mountaintop.
All right.
And it was one road up. One road down. Scared again. Still scared. You know, we didn't have any dust on our boots, so we were the new guys.
Right.
And they always used FNG.
Right.
I think you know that one already by heart.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't want to repeat it on our little conversation here. I think it would be out of class.
Well, you're free to say whatever you want to, but that's completely up to you.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to.
Sure.
Because I do ignorant things like I've done all my life, and once in a while I like to act like I got some common sense.
Uh-huh. What unit were you assigned to?
The 5-5. I was assigned to the 1st Signal Brigade.
Okay.
21st Signal Group. And that time it was the, oh Lord, I'm forgetting numbers.
Let's see.
Then it was the E-43rd Signal Battalion.
Okay.
In the lot. The 21st Group was in Cameron Bay. First Signal was in Saigon.
All right.
The main headquarters. Then from the battalion, I was like in Charlie Company, E-43rd, but later on, about halfway through, they changed it to the 556
okay.
Signal Company.
All right.
So, it was an experience, and it's still an experience to me, because I want to go back, but I can't afford it. I've watched some of the shows on TV where the guys went back. The place is darn right beautiful.
Yes, sir. Right. What were you assigned as a mechanic, like what you had been doing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Truck mechanic and generator repair.
All right.
And my additional duties, since I was only an E3, was I was a master poop burner.
Right.
Was every time I said I did something wrong, for a sergeant says, you know what to do. Time to do the pooper.
Right.
eight, 10 cans.
Oh, wow.
Only had 10 half cans of poop to scoop.
Mm-hmm.
pour a little gasoline and diesel in there, light them up and stir it.
Right.
And drink a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
We worked, you know, whatever other slop job they wanted done around there, maintenance got it.
Okay.
We only had five vehicles, six counting the old man's Jeep.
Okay.
We had one wrecker. My truck was a fuel truck, which only used collapsible bladders of 400 gallons apiece. The mess sergeant had a trailer. And then we had a truck, and then they used another truck for oddballs to carry the guys down with. Yeah, it was a troop carrier.
Okay.
And we were stuck on one side. Let me visualize this. You come in the gate, well, on convoys. When you went down the hill, you went down in second gear low.
Okay.
Or first gear low, because it was so steep and the rock looked like 10A stone, looked like boulders.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went up the hill, you went up the same way, one low all the way.
Okay.
Because of the steepness and even just the weight of the vehicle.
All right.
What else? Another goofy thing that I do in maintenance. Oh. Bus tires. I was good at doing tires. I do five a day.
Mm-hmm.
Just on my truck. Because they were getting cut up.
Alright.
And we didn't go over to Tire Joe's, and he used his automatic machine to put my tire on. I took a pickaxe and broke the tire loose from the bead.
Okay.
Then I'd pry the bead off, then I'd put my new tube and tire on. Well, when you do five a day, you get a little bored.
Right.
If the first sergeant had somebody that was being punished, they'd send him to me. So he'd be busting tires all day. And matter of fact, I'm still in contact with a guy in Washington State that busted tires for me.
Uh-huh.
I was responsible for the fuel truck. That was 800 gallons.
Okay.
And I had a guy addicted to opium was my assistant driver, which he never drove. He was my shotgun, so he sit up in front seat on the way down, on the back, and on the way back, I'd have to pick him up at an opium bin, and he'd sit at the back of the 800 gallons of fuel, just sitting there. Let's see, what else did I do in maintenance? I repaired my own truck. I did my own brakes.
Okay.
Entire system. Got all put back together, went on convoy. Got about a quarter of the way down, and I heard a pop. And I didn't have no brakes.
Wow.
So I tried to take it out of low, get it into first.
Uh-huh.
We can't do that, stupid. Well, I told this guy, Leonardo, that was with me. He's about 6 foot tall, knees set right against the dashboard. I said, man, hold on. I'm going to have to hit a tree, or we're going to go off this mountain.
Mm.
I started to head toward the tree, and I hit a boulder the size of a truck.
Mm.
Well, that swung us over, and we went off a 10-foot embankment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he lost both his knees.
Oh, no.
I just got my shoulders bent a little bit and got my lip cut. My commander fibbed on the accident report, saying that I honked the horn to warn everybody I was coming. I didn't have time to honk no horn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still got pictures of that today, and I still remember those days.
Right.
During the day go by, I don't think of Vietnam.
Okay.
I think it was a life experience that it carried with me.
Right. Yes, sir.
Good times and bad times.
All right. When you guys would be going down the hill, driving the truck, where would you be going?
Oh, we had to go back down to the base camp okay. which was where battalion headquarters was, to get and then go out. I went out to the airport where the fuel dump was, and load my bladders up, and mess started to go over to class one to get food, and the other guys to get off and go take a shower and get drunk.
Right.
And that's what we do when we get down there. We had to go back to where we came from.
Okay.
Was the lot. Right. The lot was our main compound.
All right. Were the roads there pretty secure?
We never had no problem.
Okay.
On our route, we never had a problem. No ambushes, no grenade throwing in the trucks and killing little kids and, you know, running them down or just blankly shoot them. We didn't do no crap like that. Our road was good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't go down there at night now. That would be stupid. That would be a stupid thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Even the dumbest guy wouldn't do that stupid.
Could you talk a little bit, I guess, about a little bit more about the signal site itself, and I guess your quarters and kind of what it looked like a little bit?
Well, we had since it was 6,500 foot, there was only 65 men assigned to the signal company. That included me. To the company, there's only 65 men, 65 to 85 at any one given time.
Okay.
We used to have 12 sentry dogs, and I just sent them somewhere else.
Okay.
We had a helipad about the size of a postage stamp. You only handle one aircraft at a time, and night flights were impossible. Well, we hadn't accepted the policy, but because we had antennas. Signal antennas, long distant lines, I'd go at night and sit and listen to the guys out in the field with their, backpack, radios, and you know, you'd sit there and hear them screaming for help, and then you'd hear nothing, and I called it doing stupid stuff. But, there's like a three stages. The barracks and the signal equipment was on the top.
Okay.
The second ring was the living quarters, command headquarters, command bunker. And on the third level was me.
Okay.
And the bunker line.
All right.
We had a regular mess hall made from wood and tin roof. We ate regular rations. I don't eat roast beef today for nothing.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't the grunt out in the field.
Uh-huh.
I had a decent place to sleep. We had maids to clean up our drunken mess.
Mm-hmm.
We had showers. A guy would sit there and time it. You got 30 seconds to take a shower. With hot water.
Mm-hmm.
We only had 4 hot water heaters.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the water truck. Yeah, we got a water truck. He'd go down halfway down the hill and get water. He'd go by himself.
All right.
And, we had a Quonset hunt that we used for a club.
Okay.
So it wasn't all bad. I've been to groups where they didn't think us mechanics and stuff were in Vietnam.
Mm, really?
And then I'd really make them mad by saying, well, I had cold beer.
Right.
Did you have cold beer out in the field?
Right.
And, you know, it just make them mad. I did it in a vet group in Pocatello, Idaho.
Okay.
I was the agitator because most of them were field troops.
Right.
And then I'd say, well, I slept with one sheet, my sleeping bag, on my cot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd wake up and grab a cold beer. And then I'd drink cold beer and go to breakfast. Hot breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Serving line. just to agitate them.
Right.
So it was enjoyable, that part. The bad parts, it just, I guess we'll continue on when you're ready on that.
Okay.
But our site was good. We had a good, clean site. It was orderly. Mm-hmm. And as clean as you can expect it to be clean. You wake up in the morning, you come out, and you're above the clouds.
Oh, wow. Right.
With the sun.
Right. Well, could you tell me a little bit about, I guess, the unit itself, the company, some of the personalities you ran into? You don't have to use names if you don't want to, but if you could talk a little bit about...
Oh, personalities ran rampant.
Okay.
You get the hippie-style guy, which I didn't know too much of anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the dope smokers and you had us drunks.
Right.
It was two separate social classes.
Uh-huh.
But I used to pick up their dope and bring it back to them.
Okay.
Because they bought me beer and whiskey.
Right.
And my truck never got inspected. Never.
Uh-huh.
So I was a mule.
Right.
18-year-old mule. Because when we go on convoys, under my seat of my truck was a little storage area.
Okay.
So, in the mornings, on convoys, we went on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. It'd be ice and cold beer under my seat. Compliments of the dopers.
Right.
And they did that every day. They never missed a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because had they did, I wouldn't have brought it back.
Right.
Our unit had a lot of drug use.
Okay.
A lot for the percentage of people we had. I think I'm getting off track here.
No, not at all. I was going to ask you, did the drug use, did it cause any problems in the unit from what you saw?
Yeah, most drunks would fight. We'd fight the heads.
Okay.
Heads would do something to our toilet. We'd push their toilet over.
Right.
There really wasn't any fights.
Okay.
Because everybody was either too stoned or too drunk to even think about fighting.
Right.
You know, they rationed. They give us a ration card saying we couldn't get whiskey because we weren't E5. Crap.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need that anyway. Somebody else would go get it.
Right.
But the dopers, the heads, they ranged from weed heads to heroin junkies.
Okay.
And opium.
Right.
My bunk buddy, he OD'd on heroin.
Mm-hmm.
But they were buying heroin for $30 for a softball.
Huh.
A black tar heroin.
Right.
Weed went for $5 for a grocery bag.
Mm-hmm.
A Buds. Not no trash. Buds.
Right.
And then they wanted obesitol, which was a Vietnamese weight-reducing compound, which was nothing more than speed.
Huh.
It was pure, unadulterated speed. I quit going to get it after one patrol went out. And when the guys, you know, he's flying pretty good on that obesitol, and he tripped off the ambush, and out of 11, only 3 come back. So after that, I never did anymore.
Right.
The guys begged me, I said, no, you go downtown and buy it.
Right.
But, the division between the white and black was prevalent. It was very cut and dry for those days.
Mm-hmm.
The DAP you had to do, and they really have nothing to do with the white guy, and I didn't have nothing to do with them.
Okay.
We only did what we had to do together, only because we had to do it.
Right.
And not personal.
Mm-hmm.
Except my bunk buddy was black.
Right.
But it wasn't as bad up there as it was down in the compound, or if you went to Cameron Bay, then things were thick.
Okay.
Because there was such a large amount of people together.
Right.
But like I said, there wasn't no fights. One guy got messed up bad, and they had to call a helicopter in. But what he had done, he stole a .45 caliber pistol, from one of the sergeants. Mm. Then the stupid guy tried to sell it back to one of the guys on the hill. Mm. Four of them held him down, and the other one beat him, stomped him.
Right.
I had to take my truck, my little truck, and back up, and all he could do was moan. He looked rough. He looked like a meat grinder. It'd taken him. They took him out and flew him out. Didn't have to worry about seeing him no more, but that was probably the most tragic thing I'd seen them do to each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Our division with the NCOs and officers was that just that division.
Okay.
We were divided. One is due to their rank. Two, we didn't like lifers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turned out to be a lifer. You know, what can I say?
Right.
But at that time, they were all lifers. Most of them were lifers. You know, us regular Army guys used to harass the draftees, and draftees harass us, but in verbal, but not physically.
Right.
So, that was about the mood on the hill.
Okay.
It really was intense. It was almost like a playground. Once, you know, every once in a while, a sniper would, somebody down there hunting on the side of the hill, or just wanted to harass us. Nothing totally big. Every once in a while, you know, they chuck a few in of mortar rounds,
okay,
just to watch us play, I think.
Right.
I think they were above us watching us like little ants.
Hmm.
And then before I left Vietnam, things got bad.
Okay.
One time.
All right.
But that was the mood.
Okay. All right. Well, you mentioned being the mule and transporting the drugs for the guy. Where would you get the drugs from?
Downtown. From the Vietnamese.
Okay. All right. Did you just know a guy, or was it pretty easy to find somebody?
Oh, it was. You could buy a package of cool cigarettes. It looked like it had never been opened. It'd be weed.
Okay.
They just set up. Yeah. The Vietnamese made it to where you can get cool cigarettes with them in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anywhere you went, you could buy drugs.
Right. All right.
You know, the lifers and the commands, they try to stifle it, but you couldn't do that.
Right.
Impossible. Yeah. Every once in a while, a guy would get stupid and get caught.
Mm-hmm.
The commander would make his rounds in the morning, look under sandbags and stuff and find weed.
Right.
But nobody really cared how much he found, because it didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
But, drugs were very easy to get.
Okay. All right.
Well, it's like going to the grocery store.
Mm.
You just walk in and get what you wanted.
Right.
Anywhere. Then you'd have a 7-Eleven. So, between the shopping centers and 7-Elevens, you buy all the weed and stuff you wanted.
Right. Huh. All right. Well, overall, how would you, you talked about the divisions between the leadership and everyone else, but how would you describe the leadership as how they did their jobs as commanding, as being?
At that time, at that age, my rank, I thought they were all jerks.
Okay.
But they all weren't. You know, but I get confused when I talk, like talking with you, how my feelings are today.
Right.
As opposed to when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I didn't care about them lifers.
Yeah.
Well, they were a pain in our butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they was always doing inspections, and had one commander, all he loved to do was turn that siren on about 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And then it's panic time, everybody jumping up, grabbing weapons, running down to the bunkers. The mortar crews happened to set things up. Oh, it was a goat roping.
Mm-hmm.
But they broke him of that, just turn the siren on. They blew, the guys blew half the barracks up.
Mm.
Put a little they put a little C4 underneath the building.
Right.
Didn't hurt nobody.
Right.
It was a storeroom.
Okay. So they weren't trying to frag him then?
To me, that wasn't a fragging. That was just to get him to stop doing silly crap.
Okay. All right.
But we had our first Sergeant Burrell, which I happened to fly home on the Freedom Bird, which was ironic.
Mm-hmm.
He was hated.
Okay.
He always had the infantry sergeant with him. You know, they'd go put booby traps in the poop house and, you know, burn it down. And somebody, one night they threw a grenade at him.
Mm.
They wanted to kill him bad.
Right.
I even bought a Bible from him that I have today. I mean,
right.
It didn't make, but it was fun. Everybody had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Because he tried to walk the bunker line, you'd stand up there at the barracks line and chuck rocks at him.
Right.
With nobody told on nobody.
Mm-hmm. Why was he hated so badly?
He caught four guys taking sea rations out of a Connex container.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he talked to you like you were a dog.
Okay.
he was just a pure butthead.
Okay.
A true lifer.
Right. All right. Was he pulling stuff like, I guess like things you would expect to get back at an Army base in the U.S., like things have to be a certain way, your uniform has to be worn properly?
He tried that crap on us.
Okay.
It didn't work. My boots were just as red as could be from the dust, and I had fuel oil all over me. Everybody else got dusty. He tried.
Right.
But we, as long as we were cooting together... He didn't get through with it.
Right.
Well, he'd try to get you a butt in your pocket or some crap. Where's your hat? Wear your hat a little different. It would be the normal things of normal garrison in the United States.
Okay. Right.
But we didn't like it.
Right. Sure. All right. Well, getting back to just a moment to when you first arrived in country, I know you talked about the FNG thing and all of that, but was there much of that that new guy treatment when you first arrived? Did they give you
yes.
a hard time?
When I got up the hill, they put you on guard duty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't give me a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They said I could only go down there and use the M79 grenade launcher and fragmentation grenades.
Okay.
Well, to get the fragmentation grenades, you had to untape it, pull it out, then pull the pins out, then throw it. But you had to go outside to throw them. So what they did, but somebody would pull a tripwire, intentionally, of course, knowing I was petrified, they would start shooting their M60s crisscross, there was one on each side of me. Now I got scared, jumped out, and I was going to shoot that M79 like a machine gun. I was shaking, about to pee my pants, and I ran out of ammunition for the M79, so I started unboxing and throwing grenades. When I was empty, the guys come down the line laughing their butts off. Because everybody knew what was going to happen to me.
Right.
After that, you just had to make your own place within them. You know, not everybody likes everybody.
Right. How long did it take to kind of for that the new guy stuff to stop before it just became
normal? Oh, I'd say everybody was calling everybody a new guy.
Yeah.
You know, everybody'd holler their days out.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, I'm getting dry here, but anyway,
right. Sure.
They it wouldn't go on very long.
Okay.
Then, because somebody else was coming in.
Sure.
Rotating in, so you got your turn at it. So, it didn't take long.
Mm-hmm.
They'll feel you out for a little bit. And the biggest division was if you were a head or you were a juicer.
Okay. All right.
That's how they took it.
Right.
You know, because the heads had their political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
of anti-war. I didn't know anything about that crap now. Nothing.
Right.
I was blinded. Mm-hmm. But it stopped quick.
Okay. All right. What you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you were talking about, about going into town and things like that, having interaction with the local Vietnamese there.
Right.
What was your impression of them?
They were goops.
Okay.
And I just go down there. If I wanted to take a little taxi ride, I'd get out. The guy didn't like it. I'd put my gun in his face.
Okay.
The little Vespas with the little seat on, like you see in Indian in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't want to pay, you just put the gun in the guy's face and get out. He wouldn't say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew you'd shoot him.
Right.
This wasn't Afghanistan and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq. Where they did a lot of stupid things when they wanted to kill somebody. We blatantly just shoot them.
Okay.
So we did. And then you go to the market, everything stunk. Flies all over the geese and the dogs and the goats, and it smelled of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
That was the old fermented cabbage and fish and. And then we go to a bar or two. It always served 33 beer called Tiger Piss.
Right.
And the French introduced it to the Vietnamese way back when. And it was always said that there was a drop or two of formaldehyde in it.
Uh-huh.
But that beer was nasty. Uh-huh. But after you got past one or two, it didn't make no difference.
Right.
So we drink Tiger beer.
Uh-huh.
Because we drink a lot of American, we drank American beer up on the hill.
Right.
And I drank Black Label for one solid year.
All right.
Schlitz was for the black guys to drink. We drank Budweiser. Yeah, we drank Budweiser, they drank Schlitz.
Okay.
We one day waited for a resupply convoy coming into the lot itself from a place from about 100 miles away. Well, one of them was a beer truck. 37-foot tractor trailer stacked as high as he could get the beer.
Uh-huh.
And on their way, they got ambushed.
Mm.
So when they got into, we seen them as they pulled into town, beer was foaming everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And we were out of beer.
Right.
So we had to go down to the locals and buy it. It cost us more. Shoot, I went to, it was 10 cents a can, and they wanted like a quarter a can. Now that's pure robbery.
Right.
But, I got off track again.
No, not at all. Did you feel that the Vietnamese were, untrustworthy?
Yes, in its entirety.
Okay.
I trusted my barber. He'd give us a 50-cent haircut and a shave with a straight razor.
Right.
Best shave I've ever had.
Okay.
And, I'd say about 8 months into it, they found him in the wire.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been a VC sympathizer from day one.
Right.
So we found him in the wire after one little skirmish.
Right. Now, did they seem, I guess underneath, did they seem hostile or no?
Yeah, they hated us.
Okay.
Except for the horse,
Mm-hmm.
And the pimps and the storekeepers. It was a love-hate thing.
Right.
They didn't want us there. We didn't want to be there, but they thought they'd go ahead and profit from us because we were the ones with the big money.
Right.
I lived well on $50 for a month.
Mm-hmm.
I bought all the beer I needed, all the cigarettes I needed. So I was never out of either one of the two. I drank a half a bottle of Aqua Velva, shaving liquid,
mm-hmm.
But I was drunk, one some more, so I drank wood alcohol.
Okay.
I was sick. That broke me of that little bad habit in a heartbeat. I still remember how sick I was.
Mm-hmm.
If I burped or it came out the other way, it was pure Aquavel.
Right.
You know, one of my dumb little things at 18.
Uh-huh. Right.
But, yeah, it was just a love-hate situation. It's like what they got now. You don't know who was who.
Right.
Same thing the guys are into now in the both wars. They don't know who's who.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't trust nobody.
Right.
Except Joe the poop burner.
Right.
He's the only guy I trusted.
Okay.
When I got in trouble, Joe, we hired a guy for $3 a day. A Montagnard from down at the village at the base of our mountain to burn poop.
Okay.
Well, him and I burned poop together for a long, long time. We were intimate friends.
Okay. All right.
And then, when they pulled the old outhouse out, he rode it all the way down the mountain.
Huh.
Because he wanted it. But, yeah, they hated us, just like we hated them.
All right. How about the South Vietnamese military? Did you have much contact
with them? No.
Okay.
None.
All right. All right. Well, switching gears a little bit, I guess. I know you talked about the enemy mortaring you guys occasionally, that type of thing. What, from the contact that you did have, what was your impressions of the enemy?
Well, I didn't have any time to think. I was scared.
Uh-huh. Right.
I was always scared. I was scared for 365 days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, accuracy, bah. They were, once in a while, they'd get something decent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe get the ammo dump, get the fuel dump, you know, something interesting. Other than that, they just knew where to lob them in at just to aggravate us.
Right.
Well, we couldn't find them. They could, and they found us.
Mm-hmm.
There was always nighttime.
Right.
But then no Americans go to sleep. It's not like today's forces that can see all night, do all night maneuvers. It's just the opposite.
Right.
Always scared. Always scared.
All right. Well, I know you mentioned one particular night it got pretty bad. Do you want to talk about that now? Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, that was on the 11th of June.
Okay.
Of 1970. That was 2 weeks before I was to rotate back to States. Probably about midnight, 1 o'clock, all of a sudden, all hell was breaking loose.
Mm-hmm.
There was mortar rounds coming in, gunfire from up to the perimeter. They blew one bunker up by our gate, and it just became chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up working in a mortar pit till I darn near killed us.
Mm.
You drop a round, you wait for it to go off, then you drop another round.
Right.
Well, I started to drop in another round before that one fired off.
Huh.
So it threw me out of the pits.
Right.
Well, they never got through the wire. They called in Puff the Magic Dragon,
mm-hmm.
and we had a cloud come in like we did every night. They dropped magnesium flares,
okay.
and couldn't see them. So we had a guy was that didn't make it as a lieutenant in the artillery. He plotted for the whole company. He plotted for Puff, and Puff would rain down his hot hurt. It would hurt if it hit you because he was in altitude. Shells flying off, you know, his shells flying, dropping down everywhere. But he kept buzzing, and then we had two guys that were wounded. Hadn't been for Puff, we wouldn't have been there. None of us would have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get the dust off in, you still had that cloud.
Right.
Well, plus you got our antennas.
Right.
They finally coaxed the dust off in. He said, don't load them. I don't have enough fuel. Well, why'd you even come up here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to keep circling because he couldn't get, he couldn't see nothing.
Right.
So the second dust off came, finally got in and put the two guys on it. No, it was about four, 2 to 4. And they took off. And we went on probably for, God, what seemed like days, but it was only, I'd say, you know, it lasted maybe 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I peed myself. I was so damn scared because I was so close to going home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was bad. Even the next morning, it was still bad. You know, we had mess hall had been mortared, fuel, ammunition, barracks. I mean, our structural, but they didn't hit any signal equipment.
Okay.
But our internal, they just tore stuff up. They mortared. Vietnamese did get through with a satchel charge, and he put it in my fuel truck.
Okay.
So it blew it, and then it blew my whole truck up, and that made me mad.
Right.
And then it burned it up on top of that because all the fuel had it.
Right.
Yeah, so, and then after that, we just started clean up and resupply. Then I left.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, they take the mortars and shoot flares.
Okay.
As your going away gift.
Okay.
But that night was hell.
Mm-hmm.
Have not experienced nothing like that yet.
Right.
Since.
Was that the only night that was like that at all?
That was a hell night out of 365 days.
Okay.
Other than that, we had the, like I said, sporadic.
Okay.
They'd drop mortars in sporadically, or they'd shoot in, you know, because we were too lax on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get constant barrages every day, and
right.
Like some of the guys in the field or at some of the base camps, there was a Green Beret base camp at the bottom of our. And the VC messed with them all the time because they had five howitzers.
Mm.
So they were always shooting them guys up.
Right.
But the night they got hit pretty hard, our mortarmen had it plotted to where they were. I was sitting on a big rock with another guy drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
Everything relates back to beer.
Right.
And you could see where the mortars were coming from, but the command, they called MACV, would not issue permission for them to fire down on them. Ignorant crap, you know.
Uh-huh.
Two guys got killed down there for what? For our guys not to lob one or two down and maybe get the mortar crew that was shooting them. And that's stupid crap like that.
Right. All right. Let's see. When you were not on duty, how would you guys spend your downtime? I know you've mentioned
drunk, get high.
Anything else? Letter writing, writing.
I wrote every night, or I'd make a tape occasionally. Most of the time, and in them days, of course, we didn't have DVDs, and
right.
All we had was magnetic tapes, and these were the 3-inch models, and I still got them.
Okay. Well,
but I have never found nothing yet. I had the recorder for years, and I finally threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
There was no repairing it.
Right.
And wait for the mail, take pictures, and the heads would stay headed, and the drunks would be drunken.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That was downtime.
Right. All right. Speaking of which, I meant to ask you this earlier, but what was the daily schedule like? Like, what time would you get up in the morning?
That was a good one.
Okay.
The old first sergeant tried to have formations of maybe about 7.
Okay.
But he couldn't find half of us because we were still in the bunks.
Mm-hmm.
We were defiant to orders and maintained chaos to the first sergeant.
Right.
We're supposed to have gotten up at like 5, have breakfast at 6, but we still always, once in a while we behaved.
Okay.
Right. Not very often, but Bubba the cook was the most liked guy in town. He was real dirty and wet and had exhaust dirt on me. I went in to eat, and I was standing beside one of the signal guys in chow line, and the guy said, "Man, get out of here. You ain't eating in here with me." And then a few words after that, about that time you heard smack. Bubba the cook slapped the guy upside his face with a spatula and told him, "Don't you ever mess with Carson. If it wasn't for Carson and his crew, you wouldn't be eating. And don't you ever talk to Dave like that again." And, that was one more. And they'd let Joe the poop burner,
uh-huh,
after we all got done eating, they'd feed him.
Right.
We just couldn't stand the stink of him.
Right.
But, yeah, they tried to make it formal, but it didn't work quite so well.
Uh-huh. Right. About how many hours a day would you put in the garage?
Let me see. What were we? We were supposed to, work from daylight to dark.
Okay.
But if we didn't go out on convoy, we'd only be working 5-6 hours a day.
Okay.
And we were drinking while we were working, so it didn't make much difference.
Right.
My indoctrination to drinking, of course, was genetic.
Okay.
On my mother's side.
All right.
Well, Vietnam enhanced my drinking. So I drank every day for one solid year. I don't remember missing a day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That played a major role on if I was going to do any work or not.
Right.
So we didn't get much done. Other than tires. I hate tires. I hate to see a truck go by. I hate tires.
Right. All right. Well, did you get a chance to go on R&R?
I had the chance. My wife and I were going to meet in Hawaii, uh-huh, but we changed our mind.
Okay.
We didn't have the money to do it.
Uh-huh.
So she said, "Well, you can go to Australia or Bangkok." No, if I would, didn't want to go there either.
Right.
I'd get in trouble. More trouble than I wanted to be in.
Right.
Because
right.
That's where most of the guys went, was Australia and Bangkok.
Uh-huh.
Give me 1 second here, please. Here, hold this and be quiet. Hold it and be quiet, please.
I am holding it.
My grandson.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I wish in a way we had done it, but another way I'm glad we didn't, because it had been too much heartbreak, to go be with her for less than two weeks and have to give her up again.
Right.
So I just didn't go.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, any other particularly memorable moments, anything else that we should mention from your tour before talking about coming home? Anything we haven't covered yet?
going home. Got on the trucks, the same supply trucks. As a matter of fact, I went down in my own truck, and I wasn't driving. The new guy was driving.
Okay.
And then they fired the flares off, of course, for us, and then I got down to the lot, and then I tried for 3 days to get a flight out. Vietnamese villagers were getting priority with their goats and their nasty fish.
Right.
So it took me 3 days to get a flight to Cameron Bay.
Right.
And we out-processed. They give us a pee test. Uh-huh. Took a blood test. Because if you're drunk, you weren't going home. And if you had drugs in your system, you weren't going home. You'd go to a rehab tent.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was funny part.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what was the actual coming home like for you?
That was fun. It was different.
Okay.
Took a 16-hour flight. We landed at McCord Air Force Base in Washington State.
Okay.
They took us by bus to the Army side. We went to the warehouse, got fitted for our Class A uniform.
All right.
We went to a debriefing. Then they told us to go downstairs and get dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And stupid me, I had brand new fatigues. I had 3 or 4 sets, brand new pair of jungle boots. All I did was strip my clothes off, put my Class A's on, and got on a civilian bus to the Seattle-Tacoma airport.
Okay.
Me being young and stupid, there were some good people on the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd buy me drinks.
Right.
Well, I couldn't handle my liquor. I could drink beer all day. I couldn't handle my liquor.
Right.
And I jumped up one time, knocked a stewardess carrying a tray, and that made a real ass out of me. and then the old couples wouldn't buy me nothing more to drink. So I slept.
Right.
I was going, and I hadn't called my wife yet. So I said, well, I'll just keep going. So I flew from there a few bunny hops and got to Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
Got me a taxi cab, drove right to the house, right up to the house, one house up, and started to walk in, and a neighbor yelled, "David's home." That's how far I made it. And then, I was home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my oldest daughter, which is still a pain in my butt, was born.
Right.
And like I said, she was 8 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the ending to the rest of the beginnings.
Okay. All right. And how much longer did you have before you had to go back?
I didn't have to go back.
What I meant to say was, how much time did you have off before you had to report for your next duty station?
I had 30 days.
30 days, okay.
And then we traveled to Fort Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
from Tampa, Florida, in a 1960 Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
That would overheat if you pulled in the hill too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we carried like 20, 25 gallons of water. And, oh, it was terrible on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, the baby, of course, and then we had a little dog. All we had was gas money.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of bologna on the trip. I had a U-Haul trailer. Wheel bearings went on it. So we had to wait. State trooper come by. He made a call in. They got me a record. They got me a U-Haul company to the umbrella, and they fixed that. Hundreds of miles away, my car goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
The 60 Chevy has 2 dry shafts.
Okay.
And then they have a bearing in the center. Well, the bearing went out. So, no money, out in the middle of nowhere. This guy just kept driving real slow, like 1 mile an hour, with it flopping. And we finally got to this town, and we pulled in for the night.
Right.
Well, the guy had owned, I got up, and the guy had owned the place, and, "What's up, soldier?" And I go, "My car, something wrong with my car." I got this. He says, "Yeah, your bearing's out." I said, "How much money is that going to cost?" He says, "The part's $14.95, but I'll do it for free, the labor, since you just got back from Nam."
Right.
So he put the bearing in. We went on our merry way. Then went to Fort Bliss, Texas, out in the middle of nowhere. I worked from my house to my work was 35 miles in the desert.
Right.
Around maybe 20, 30 miles from White Sands Missile Range.
Okay.
I was assigned to a missile company in repair in the motor pool.
Right.
Had nothing to do with missiles. Other than support vehicles.
Right.
And I had went from E1 to E5.
Okay.
In that year in Vietnam. Well, my mind was still in E1, but I was in E5.
Right.
And so, my warrant officer, he was a W-3, got tired of my antics and told me, "Go get a toolbox." And he put me with a C-3. He called him over here. He says, "Carson, you go with him until you're ready to become an NCO. So I went and got me a toolbox. I worked about 3 weeks with this E-3. And I said, "You know, I've had enough of this crap." So I went and knocked on the chief's door. He said, "Come on in, Carson." I said, "Sir," I said, "Chief, I'm tired of this crap. I'm an E5 and I want to be one." He says, "Good, good. Yeah, that's fine. And I want to turn my toolbox back in." "Yeah, yeah, yeah, you can do that." Then he handed me my a blank efficiency report. He said, "You fill it out, I'll sign whatever you put down there." We're normally, it's like three people in chain for efficiency report. He said, "Whatever you want, I'll sign it."
Right.
He said, "You tell me what you want to be, or what your efficiency was."
Right.
So I did it the best I could. And then that carried on throughout my career.
Okay.
When my junior NCOs, it was efficiency report time for them, I say, "Make me one." I'll sign whatever you put down there.
Right.
And it worked.
Right. All right. How much longer did you stay in after you got back from Vietnam?
To 1988, when I retired.
Okay.
20 years.
All right.
I had a total of 12 years total in Germany. 3 months in Fort Bliss, my basic and AIT, and I stayed 20. I became a lifer. And words were eating me up from a year ago.
Right.
And I went to reenlist, and my first sergeant says, "No, Dave, you don't want to go to Hawaii. You want to go to Germany." So I reenlisted, and we went to Germany for the first time.
Okay.
After that, let's see, where else had I been in my life? So I had 4 tours in Germany. Can't think where else I went in the world.
Okay.
I didn't go to very many places. My last assignment was Pocatello, Idaho.
Okay.
As an active duty, man it with a reserve unit.
Okay.
Which is totally, that's how they worked it. They put at least one or two active duties in with the reserve unit, and I got a permanent duty station.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I called my manager, my career manager one day, and, it was getting close to, I think I had 17 in then. And I called my career manager for my MOS, and I tried to get it out of him. I said, he said, I'm getting ready to send you somewhere, Dave. I said, what do you mean you're going to send me somewhere? What are you going to do, send me to Korea? He said, well, I can't tell you that. I said, yeah, that's what you're going to do, aren't you? No, that I got to backtrack.
Okay.
Normally, the Army would only give a 1 to 3 year extension on your duty station.
Okay.
I had to ask for 4 years in order to finish out to my 20.
Right.
And I got an approval for 4 years, so that set me into. So, but I didn't realize they still could reassign me at 20 and do involuntary stay, so they wanted me out. But
right.
I called my career manager again and told him I want to retire,
mm-hmm.
and I'm scared to death. That's the biggest decision I've ever made in my life, next to getting married.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, where am I going? I want to retire. He says, I said, are you going to send me anywhere? He said, I can't tell you that, Dave. You know that. I said, come on, man, tell me. He wouldn't tell me. He says, but if you want to retire, you got two words to use. You can use yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
If you say yes, I want to retire, don't ever talk to me. You'll never talk to me again. Because I'll have you ready to retire very shortly.
Right.
If you say no, then fine. I'm going to send you somewhere. And I knew in my heart, my head, where he was going to send me. He was going to send me to Korea.
Right.
And so I finished out my 20 years in Pocatello, Idaho.
Okay.
It's the finest soldiers I have ever had or served with.
Okay.
Because most all of them were prior service.
Right.
What we do when we go to the field, my people had to put a GP medium up for all the guys, and I did have women in my maintenance, so they'd put up a separate tent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, went to Fort Carson, Colorado, the exact place I started and the last place when I ended, but it was raining, so they got the big tent up and got the lights on. She was my driver for convoys, and she went and got my bags, made sure of my briefcase, and set my bunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was raining bad. People were trying to come in to get out of there. I said, no. You get out of my house.
Right.
And then they would go start the spare generator that we used for the bakery unit.
Okay.
And have coffee made. And the reason they had coffee made was because if they didn't get coffee to me and Chief, we'd start micromanaging.
Uh-huh.
And so then Chief and I would get a coffee, and we'd just sit there and shoot the breeze.
Right.
So they had it made. Get us out of their hair. Both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make, and then what, the last time, we didn't get the female tent up. I only had two females in the company, two, three. Well, my driver was a female. I would not let a male be my driver on convoy. No.
Right.
No. I didn't want no man driving me.
Right.
She was a deputy, and I would only let her. Dave, go ahead and go on in.
Okay.
Here. Take the keys. Go on in. Grandma asked where I'm at. I'm not still on my phone call.
Hey, Grandpa, what's that? Your old Army buddy?
Yeah, old Army
buddy. The guy that sent you the cruise?
No, it's something else here.
No. Oh, my baby. Oh.
Now I'm back.
Sure, no problem. All right.
But with them, my maintenance section make an ass out of every other section in the company.
Okay.
Because we'd have our tent up, our lights going, generator going, coffee made.
Right.
She would set my, like I said, she'd put my, all the maintenance crews would go in there and help each other and for me and my boss even, and set their, make their, put their cots together, put the sleeping bags out for them, put the personal gear underneath.
Right.
Have everything set for nighttime.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was raining, and we only had one female. The rest of them, they had put in another tent somewhere.
Okay.
Well, my driver says, well, I don't care if I stay here with you guys. I ain't going to see nothing I haven't seen lately.
Mm-hmm.
So, first sergeant come in, and he was hot.
Right.
You can't do that. We're getting in trouble. I said, no, come on, cop. I says, she don't care. I don't care. The guys don't care. All she can do is get in her sleeping bag and take her clothes down to her, whatever she wants, however she slept.
Right.
And she got dressed the same way. I love my convoys. But we convoy from Pocatello, Idaho to California, Washington State. I have about 50 vehicles, and I tell them, do not drink any beer in them trucks. So I would drive ahead with my driver, get out of the truck, because I like, there's certain things I could look at that they couldn't see.
Okay.
And they'd throw beer cans at me. They'd moon me.
Right.
Each time they always did it. But they were enjoyable folks. I had a good time, and I was sad. They gave me a going away gift. And
mm-hmm.
I was scared to have retired to begin with because I figured at the age of 37, I wouldn't have any luck in the looking for a job. And number two, Idaho, Utah, the Mormon religion runs everything.
Okay.
It's like I'm in the Bible belt right now,
right.
Of Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
But not like how the LDS people, I'm not criticizing them. Because they do good things for people.
Right.
But they're the majority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they couldn't ask you what your religion was on a job application. They'd wait and ask you what ward or state you were in.
Okay.
And then you wouldn't get the job.
Right.
Because you were non-Mormon. So that was one of my factors then.
Mm-hmm.
I figured I was going to be too old for the job market, period.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and got out at 37 and we moved back to Florida. The wife and kids went back to Florida. I had to go back out, and I had 6 months left.
Okay.
And I didn't do nothing.
Right.
I mean, I did nothing. I was a volunteer fireman. I enjoyed that immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went home.
Okay.
I tried to run a business, a lawn equipment business and repair. That went in a hole in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I had went to a treatment center, alcohol and drug treatment center in California outside of Vacaville Air Force Base. So I was dry for 5 years, and then I let it go, and I was back off the old wagon.
Mm-hmm.
So that brought my businessless mind to nowhere.
Okay.
So we lost everything we had.
Mm. Right.
So I went and applied at a factory. That lasted 3 months. That was the cleanest maintenance job I'd ever had. Linoleum floors, nothing to get dirty on.
Right.
They closed down 3 months after I got started.
Hmm.
So then I went to another company that made electronic cables.
Okay.
That lasted 2 days.
Hmm.
Three, maybe three. There's six owners. And the old guy that did electronics was a retired electronic man.
Okay.
He was about 75. And me.
Okay.
Well, me, you can't do six people's requests at the same time.
Right.
So I figured it out. I went and got the dolly at lunchtime. Went and got my toolbox, dollied it out to my truck. I went back into the break room, stood there. One of the owners come in and says, "What's up?" I says, "I quit. I cannot work under six people's directions."
Right.
"Well, we could change this." I said, no, I got to go. So I quit that job, and I went to work for another guy at a lawnmower shop.
Mm-hmm.
He's dumber. He was dumber than a box of rocks. Mm-hmm. Accused me of being a thief, so it went from there.
Right.
Then another guy had bought a lawnmower shop. I went to work for him, but I had to do wrench turning this time, not supervising.
Right.
So I worked for him for a year, and the guy that was going to replace me, he was a big guy. He drove a Harley, and he stood up on his Harley for some reason, stretched his legs, and he lost control, and he killed himself.
Mm.
Well, that's where the mechanic went.
Right.
And I kept telling Carl the whole time, I said, "Man, we got to get somebody in here because I'm not getting any younger."
Right.
I think I was 48, playing with lawnmowers, and I worked like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
He paid me I got about $500,000 pay of being a mechanic for lawnmowers.
Okay.
I got 9 or 10, and best is 15. Well, anyway, I kept telling him, I said, "Carl, you got to get somebody. I'm getting wore out."
Right.
One day I got wore out, ended up in the hospital.
Mm.
And in the hospital for about 3 weeks because I had, on the outcome of, I smoked, I drank, I partied too much, I did this too much. Well, it all caught up with me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went on, Medicare disability. And then we lived there. Then we moved. My dad lives here in Sykes in Missouri where I'm living now because I'm living in his trailer. He passed a year ago.
Mm.
And my diabetic doctor is Jordanian.
Okay.
But I didn't know that he had worked for the VA for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "You don't have your VA?" I go, "No." He says, "You get up there and do it now." So I went and did the preliminaries of the VA, and I got my 100% service-connected disability.
Mm, okay.
Then the Army has a pay system for all stemmed from the federal employees double-dipping. So they want us to double dip. That's how I seen it. So,
right.
VA sent my paperwork to the Army. They made a decision of my health.
Okay.
And they came up with 70%. Well, that gives me 3 checks.
Right.
I get my Social Security disability, I get my VA, and I get my combat-related service-connected.
Okay.
So I do pretty good financially.
Right, yes, sir.
I'm more fortunate than millions and millions of other guys that served, whether they went to NOM or not. And, you know, my sympathy goes with them. The one thing that helped me was I had my original medical file.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
From the day I went in to the day I got out.
Right.
Excuse me.
Sure.
I have to shut the door so Nikki doesn't jump on
Gabby. Okay. I'm back.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, so that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it took a while. You know, like Social Security took 18 months. And
right.
Had to go in front of a hearing federal judge and... But he approved me that day, and the normal was 1 to 3 months for approvals.
Okay.
He did it that day.
Yeah. Oh, right.
I was scared. he asked me, how was my golf game? I said, sir, I can't golf. Mm-hmm. Then we went through the other procedural crap they got to have. And then his last question to me was, he says, Mr. Carson, how's your golf game? I said, sir, I can't golf.
Right.
Yeah, so we did the bowling and the golf questions. Well, fine, we're done.
Right.
I got approval. He said, I approve it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Guess he's in a hurry. But anyway, I'll let you ask another question now.
Okay. All right. what was your rank when you retired from the Army?
I was an E7, sergeant first class.
Okay. All right. Backing up just a little bit here to a couple of questions about Vietnam-related questions.
No problem.
All right. After you got back home from Vietnam, did you follow the war at all through the media? Did you keep up with what was going on?
No, because I stayed. It's like when people ask me if the flower child put the rose in my end of my gun barrel or spit on me. I didn't even know what a hippie was.
Uh-huh, right.
And I really didn't know what a hippie was after I got home.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'd watch TV, the same stuff. My wife, to add into that, my wife watched TV every night, the news,
mm-hmm.
to see if she could see me.
Right.
Which, of course, was impossible.
Right.
I would call her occasionally on what they called Mars.
Okay, right.
And that was the only system we had. We didn't have cell phones and satellites. But anyway, back to your question.
Okay. All right.
Go
ahead.
I didn't see any hippies
mm-hmm.
when I come home.
All right.
Because you stay within your community, not only for camaraderie, is a security that you feel when you're on within the military system,
mm-hmm.
not just the Army, but the military system. You got that camaraderie and you got that safety net.
Right.
So I watch TV every night and didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was still drinking.
Right. Well, any reaction to the way the war ended?
Another flop.
Mm-hmm.
We got our nose stuck into something that we didn't need to be into. As it is present day, we got into things that we didn't need to put a nose into.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants genocide, well, let them have their genocide. They're going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't believe in genocide.
Right.
But I can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, just a few more questions here.
Not a problem. I'm enjoying this.
Okay. All right. Well, looking back on your Vietnam experience, how do you feel about your service? How do you feel about it?
I served my country.
Mm-hmm.
I served with the guys that helped serve and so-called protect our country.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did my job. I did what was expected of me. I had issues, alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
Bipolarness, which I didn't know about until about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To go quickly on that one, we had the old style backpack fire extinguishers. You had to, it's like a backpack sprayer you go to Walmart and get. You just pump it and it'll spray for you.
Right.
Well, we had the old metal ones, but we didn't have any caps for them.
Okay.
So we'd pour out of this 55-gallon drum, fill them up, start walking the perimeter, and just your whole back and your pants are soaked.
Mm.
I mean, we'd have to do weed control about every 3-4 weeks. We'd have to go do it again. It was the same old guys.
Mm-hmm.
And but I did my duty.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not enough what can I say? It hasn't left me.
Okay.
And I haven't left my country.
Yes, sir.
We didn't get the big parades. I went to a couple little ones, and that was a joke. The best thing that ever happened to me was about 2 months ago.
Okay.
You know, on the back of my van, I have a Vietnam veteran and retired Army on the back, and we were loading groceries in, me and my grandson, and the guy says, "Were you in Vietnam?" I go, "Yeah." He says, "Well, welcome home."
Mm-hmm.
He is the only one that had ever said that with sincerity.
Mm, right.
And I about couldn't handle it. That was too emotional for me, and it still sticks with me today because I watch the news. I'm on the internet like an idiot, and I like anything that's military.
Uh-huh.
And I told my wife, I said, "Well, why don't all of us retirees are getting old now? You send us to Iraq and Afghanistan. Give us a little bit of whiskey.
Right.
Give us our weapons and ammunition. Give us a vehicle. Let us go fight the war. Because we don't have to come back and save today's generation." I know this has been going on since time was invented, wars. And everybody's got a good reason to have one. My biggest pet peeve is manufacturing and political boo-boos.
Right.
The president listens to too many stupid people.
Right.
His commanders in chiefs and sub-chiefs and generals, they have always fed the president the wrong stuff.
All right.
But I love my country.
Yes, sir. All right. You touched on this a little bit, do you think the U.S. Should have been involved in Vietnam, or do you think
No.
that was a mistake? Okay.
No, we had no reason to be there.
Okay.
They didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and they were worried about another country invaded. They were the whole country to begin with.
Uh-huh.
And this communist rule stuff is just, that's bunko. It was their country to begin with.
All right.
And people started making a political thing out of it about communism.
Uh-huh.
Because we still had that Cold War stuff going on, and so I think there was a confusion in all their brains. We said there was no reason to kill 58,000 men. I've been to the wall twice, and we just had the movie Wall here. And it's such a solemn place. Well, it didn't have to be.
Right.
It didn't have to be. And today's conflicts, they've got a low body count. Be harsh about it. I mean, yeah, 10,000 people is nothing in 10 years. We were 10 years in Vietnam.
Right.
58,000. You know, they're not taking B-52s and running them up down the streets in either place.
Right.
They're worried about politics and religion. Religion has always dominated wars.
Right.
Since the beginning and before our times. Before time became time. So, but if I was asked to go back, yes, I would.
Okay, yes, sir.
I'd probably die from the heat in about 10 minutes, but I'd try.
Right, yes, sir. All right. What's your opinion of U.S. policy towards Vietnam today with trade, that type of thing, veterans going
back? Well, you can get cheaper T-shirts, Nike, a U.S. ship harbor going into Hanoi Harbor or Saigon Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
You spend 10 years, 58,000 dead, millions of wounded and maimed, and you want to make tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Now, Vietnam, they're going to start sinking a little bit more money into Vietnam.
Right.
To justify the companies that have went there, they're no better than the Vietnamese.
Okay.
The same thing goes with one from Mexico. Trading the other companies go to Mexico.
Right.
Same difference. But it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, just wrong.
Okay. All right. Well, how about things like veterans going back to Vietnam? What do you think about that?
I like that.
Okay.
I would like to do it myself, but like I said earlier,
mm-hmm.
it's a financial nightmare.
Right.
I have been in contact with guys that I had known in my unit.
Mm-hmm.
One had went back and stayed for a month.
Right.
He sent me pictures of where we were at on the top of the mountain. They use that for a hiking trail.
Okay.
And the only resemblance of anything American up there is all the concrete, super poured concrete, you know, around 20, 30 feet, the concrete that held the big radio antennas.
Okay, right.
I seen a Vietnamese girl standing by a tree, so I went through my, I don't know how they demilled the place myself.
Hmm.
I do not know how they cleaned that place up. They must have told a whole bunch of people to start walking.
Hmm.
And that picture, I got the same picture, and it was just outside the perimeter line.
Huh, okay.
And it looks beautiful. They got a hotel up there. I don't need to go to Hanoi or make a Saigon trip. I just need a Dalat trip. That's all I ever wanted. But
right.
It's not going to happen. So I'll just take the best of memories and
mm-hmm.
you know I'm glad the old guys are doing it.
Right.
You know, it'll bring a partial ending to their war.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Right. All right.
Economically, the U.S. sucks when it comes to letting our jobs go.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Vietnam.
Right.
But then we take Japanese, then we do China. China's communist country. I mean, we're just the sounding board for other countries. You and I can have start our own little country somewhere, and ask for a couple $1 billion to get us started.
Right.
Then we'll defraud the government and bail them out.
Right.
You can bail out. You can bail out General Motors, but you can't bail out the school systems.
Right.
You know, New York's getting ready to drop about 180 schools.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sense in that. Teachers around here are getting laid off, and
right.
I'm glad I'm 60. But I feel for the, well, they're not even counted. The baby boomer time, it's the one like my grandson, he's 11-year-old. He's got something to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Total world crap. You don't know if you're going to have anything to fall back on, like people with Social Security.
Right.
But they took the Social Security the way, I think it was Hoover that started it.
Hoover, FDR, one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they didn't mean for it to be your retirement check.
Yeah.
And so many elderly think that's what their retirement was.
Uh-huh.
And they got fooled.
Right.
Well, they may not be nothing for my grandson's
right.
generation.
Right.
And a lot of other things.
Yeah. Sir. All right. Well, before wrapping things up, is there anything else you'd like to say, anything else we haven't covered at this point?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, one, I overly enjoyed that I was able to contact an organization like the university.
Yes, sir.
And have this 2.5-hour conversation.
Right, yes, sir.
It means a lot to me. My wife didn't understand because I took off and set over to school at 1:30 so I wouldn't miss your call.
Mm-hmm.
Or be, my house has got dogs and they'd be barking. Wife be hollering at me, grandson, and so I went over there early, and she won't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had a back operation and now she's got short-term memory loss. Well, she don't understand a lot of this stuff, and I wasn't gonna let that, nothing ruin my conversation with you,
sir,
and to your staff and the university.
Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to do this to tell.
I was in Killeen.
Okay.
For 2 years. I love Texas.
All right.
But a good attaboy for you.
Well, thank you.
One. You get my number one attaboy.
Yes, sir.
Number two can go to your staff. Number three can go to the university.
All right.
And number four can go to the state of Texas.
All right.
Because you're the only one that I have that had a program for just us Vietnam guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the way the guys are getting treated today.
Yes, sir.
You know, a $400,000 death certificate. I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Mine was $5,000.
Right.
You know, they've gotten better equipment as far as the troops go, not as far as command goes.
Right.
They're still no different than they have been for 10,000 years, but I feel that I haven't done enough for today's warrior.
Okay.
You know, I don't live close. The closest military boat is where I was at for a drill sergeant from 79 to 81 is Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. That's right. 4 hours away.
Right.
I had wished I was close to the military so I could do more for those that are still serving, the wounded, the families, or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Before I leave this world, but I'll send in contributions to, you know, AER, and cause I know the money's going somewhere. But I applaud the program that you and I just had together.
Well, thank you, sir. We certainly appreciate you you doing this.
How long has this program been going now?
The oral history part of the project's been going on since 1999.
Mercy.
Yeah, but the project itself's been going on about 10 years longer than that. But
mercy.
But
that's awesome.
At this point, we have, as far as oral histories go, we've got over. Well, I guess we're over 800 now, so.
Good.
But.